Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week at the Damage Report. I'm John Adrola. It's Monday, and so Brooke Thomas is here.
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
How's it
going? I'm glad to be here.
We were just talking before the break about tomorrow's special event. We're going to be recording our annual Hostmates competition.
Everybody loves a train wreck.
They do. So if you haven't seen the first one, which is available for members, TYT members, it is a game show competition where pairs of hosts go head to head with each other to see how much they know about each other.
Right,
And last year when we filmed it, Brooke and I had known each other for like 72 hours. And so we were
we
well prepared.
We had known each other for a year.
No,
it's
like,
so sad.
Like 8 months, maybe. And we didn't really talk for most of that. But now, basically best buds.
Basically, we have a thing. You know, I think that without me in your life, you would be happier.
Yeah.
Less stressed, but less fulfilled.
Less distracted, but I wouldn't have any idea what was going on Twitter outside of a very narrowly defined political set of people.
Exactly. She's, keep you fun.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're going to try to do well. Our goal is to do twice as well as last year. Yes. So yes, we are aiming for two correctly answered questions. We set the bar high.
We're terrible, but I swear we like each other. But we just.
Well, you like me. There's that. Don't get me wrong. I like that you like me. I think it's one of your best qualities.
Don't lie to these people, okay?
Okay, no, we're gonna have a lot of fun. But anyway, I don't know exactly when it's gonna be available, but you know what? Just to be safe, become a member today by going to tyt.com/John.
Yes.
You'll not only get Hostmates and Lastmates Hostmates. You can watch that while you're getting ready for this year's, but also you can watch the shows live, all the content, all of everything.
And wait. The two producers behind the scenes, Sophie and Angel, they're great. We talk about them all the time. But Angel is fairly new to the team. And there is a like behind the scenes, like, you know, how she does her job, you know. It's hilarious. Like, laugh. I sent you a
bit. Oh, the behind the scenes, yes.
It's really funny. So if you become a member, you'll get to watch that too. And it's really funny.
She talks about us a bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you know what? We got a lot planned, lots of guests, lots of stories, all that. But let's just jump right into it. With I think one of the biggest news stories of the morning. Today we're gonna talk about Lisa Page because for the first time in literally years, Lisa Page is talking. If you're not familiar with Lisa Page, welcome to American politics. But anyway, she's a former FBI lawyer who became like one of the big celebrities, like villains in right-wing media because of some text messages that she sent to Peter Strzok. Back before the election, that some right-wingers have irrationally, insanely taken to show that the FBI had a contingency plan to block Trump from becoming president. A counterpoint of evidence against that theory is that nobody blocked him from becoming president, but they've ignored that part the whole time.
Right.
But anyway, so Lisa Page has been tweeted about by Donald Trump more than 25 times. Virtually every time she has been identified by the president of the United States, the most powerful individual human on the planet, as the lover of Peter Strzok. Yes, he uses the word lover. And so why did she finally come out and talk after like 2 years in the news? Why is she talking? She spoke at the Daily Beast with Molly Zhongfast and said, she asked her why she was willing to talk now. And she responded, honestly, his demeaning fake orgasm was really the straw that broke the camel's back. I guess he's just trying to finally have something in common with Melania. I don't know. But anyway, so when she references a fake orgasm, you might think, what does this have to do with American politics? But no, he actually did that. If you don't remember this video, take a look.
I love you, Peter. I love you too, Lisa. Lisa, I love you. Lisa, Lisa. Oh God, I love you, Lisa. And if she doesn't win, Lisa, we've got an insurance policy, Lisa. We'll get that son of a bitch out.
That was just a couple of months ago. That was the president pretending to have an orgasm while mimicking have like two FBI employees having sex with each other at a rally that was attended by thousands of his fans.
You know, it's so wild, like how often because of like federal like rules that we have to censor things that the president said in public.
Yeah.
The president of the United States says things that aren't allowed on TV.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was crazy. He's the conspiracy theory that they had a insurance policy, he says there. Okay, so what did they just forget? Like it was like they planned for months and months and months and then they missed their alarm. They didn't do it.
Right. What's also so fascinating about all of this is that nobody is truly non-biased. No, everyone has their own perspective. How you move through this world affects how you think, how you see things. Everyone in the entire world, if they're paying attention, because I'm sure there are people who just don't even know who the president is. There's got to be like 5 people out there. Mm-hmm. But everyone has an opinion on whether they like him or not. It doesn't stop people from doing their jobs, because I talk about this when it comes to like news media, this idea that like you have to be non-biased. What it really means is like, no, you have to write and operate in public as if you are a slim, rich, straight white man. Mm-hmm. That's it. Which means like all I marginalized pretend. Communities. Yeah. Like don't come at things from their perspective. No. That's biased. Oh, also like Christian. But
yes.
So no one doesn't have an opinion on this. It's just that theirs went public. But like this, and I get it.
And we're gonna have a little quote from her about that.
When something like that happens, like I get that. You can't be a part of this investigation. You can't be a part of what we're doing. I understand.
I don't necessarily agree
because
with that,
of optics. Uh-huh. But the idea that nobody else has an opinion, yours just happened to go public, like
for optics, he removed them before we ever found out about it. They had already been removed.
Right.
That's fine, okay. And the text messages. If you are a huge lover of the president, you're not gonna like that. What's important is that you do not allow your political preferences to impact your job as a lawyer at the FBI. And no one has been able to assemble any evidence that she actually was affected, that she did her job in a different fashion based on what she believed. All she did was say in private to someone she knew what she preferred, which is the sort of thing that the right, which loves to say that they love free speech and all of that, should like. But of course they don't. And by the way, you sort of got into this, but if you can find for me a 40 to 50 year old employee of the FBI who has gone through their entire life, gone through college, gone through training, lived in DC for literally decades, operating all of this, and they don't have any opinions about politics, you've got a sociopath on your hands. Take them out of the FBI. They can't be involved in anything because that is bizarre. How would you operate in that world and have no thoughts whatsoever about politicians or anything?
Two things that you just said, like, you should be able to do your job without, like, that it doesn't have to, your work isn't based on your opinion. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you don't have to not have an opinion in order to do your job fairly. And the idea that anybody doesn't have an opinion is bizarre, and we have to get past that. We are all different. We all have opinions. And also, you said that, you know, no one's been able to find any evidence that this affected her doing her job. Looks like on the 9th, we're gonna find out specifically that they did not.
Exactly, leaked press accounts indicate the report will exonerate Page of the allegation that she acted unprofessionally or showed bias against Trump. Now, that should be devastating.
The president likes that word too.
Exonerated? Mm-hmm. Total exoneration, yes. So that's supposedly gonna happen on the 9th. It could be wrong. Sure. Maybe not, but that's what we believe. Now, Trump and his backers have been hyping up this report for months and months and months, saying this is the definitive thing that's gonna take them all down. Lots of people on the internet think that Q is involved or something. So if it comes out and says that she didn't do anything wrong, expect to not hear anything about it ever again. It will simply have disappeared. But anyway, I wanna give you a little bit more from Lisa Page, and you should totally read this interview on the Daily Beast, but I have a suspicion that generally when I ask you to read things, few people do. So I'm gonna read you some excerpts. So anyway, she said, I had stayed quiet for years, hoping it would fade away, but instead it got worse. It had been so hard not to defend myself, to let people who hate me control the narrative. I decided to take my power back. Now on that IG report, which we just spoke about, she says, while it would be nice to have the IG confirm publicly that my personal opinions had absolutely no bearing on the course of the Russia investigations, I don't kid myself that the fact will matter very much for a lot of people. The president has a very loud megaphone. He's gonna take whatever he wants out of that. And his fans, none of them are going to look at one word of the IG report. If they see anything of it at all, it will be a two-word quote that Trump will put in a tweet somewhere. Now in terms of, the weird thing about this, and I want to be very clear about this, is there is no reason why you or I should know who Lisa Page is.
Right, that's
there's no reason at all. She's a lawyer for the FBI. She was removed from investigation. The fact that she has been tweeted about dozens of times by the president, that she has talked about constantly on Fox News, that is a bizarre, weird thing. That should scare you about the right wing, that they can take a federal employee like that, elevate her to the level where she fears for her life on a daily basis, all on a bedrock of nothing. There's nothing there.
This is the first time a lot of the people who have been tweeting about her obsessively are actually seeing what she looks like.
I had no idea what she looked like. So, I didn't care. There's no reason. I've already forgotten. There's no reason why we should know who this person is. But anyway, so I'm not going to go through all of this. I was going to read one or two of the tweets to show the examples of how Donald Trump attacks her in public.
And she's like, you get it.
You already get it. Read the interview with Molly Jeanfest. It's very good. Hopefully, best case scenario, after this IG report, you have Fox News talk about it for a week. And then hopefully she can go back to just like being a lawyer or whatever and living her life. Because all she did was have an opinion about Donald Trump, which we are all guilty of. I guess her real sin was thinking it would be bad if he became a president, which just proves how qualified she was for a job in the first place. She's a very rational person. Anyway, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
People often ask, what did this verdict cost? It cost everything. The legal system tried to kill me.
So there you're seeing footage from One Child Left Behind, which delves into the legacy of the 2009 scandal, where over 1,000 teachers were investigated for test cheating, with 35 being indicted, 12 going to trial, and 11 being found guilty. This is a massive issue that I'm very excited to learn more about. And we're joined now on the Damage Report by Dr. Dana Evans, a former principal and one of those convicted in the scandal. Dr. Evans, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm grateful.
Glad to have you on. And I would like to learn more about this for people who might not have been following back in 2009 when this was developing. Could you give us a brief overview of what this was all about?
So there was an investigation in Atlanta. They used the eraser analysis. McGraw-Hill did an eraser analysis of all the test scores in Georgia. And any child who had erased more than three times on a particular section of the test was flagged for potential cheating. There were many schools in Georgia who were found with erasers. They were disproportionately found more in high poverty schools. And as there was a subsequent investigation, it was, that's what they call it, an investigation. I'm not sure about that terminology. And then they, there were certain schools that were targeted, although there were whites and blacks and all different types of people who had flagged classrooms. Only the African Americans were indicted and then subsequently jailed. So we are fighting. We're still fighting we're in the appeal stage now. There's one of the defendants is in jail now. Tamara Cotman, who's also in the film, another teacher just recently got out, and the rest of us are fighting for an appeal, hoping to get a fair trial in Georgia, which I very much don't think we will, but I'm still gonna fight regardless of what happens to me.
So I'm glad that you pointed out the the sort of patterns and irregularities in who tended to go down for this. But let's also talk about the nature of the charges. So these yes. were RICO charges, which you know, I'm pretty ignorant about it, but I know that it's associated
the
with the mob yeah. and gangsters. Yes.
Drug kingpins.
You don't appear to be a gangster.
No. I'm a bad gangster. If I'm a gangster, I really suck at it. I was actually charged with 35 years in jail. The RICO charges would have given 20 years, and then there were three other charges for falsification of documentation to the states. And that's basically because I was a principal and I signed off on documents saying that we followed the protocols of the state, which we did. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I think that the charges were almost a scare tactic, because when you're not a criminal, when you have never been involved in the justice system at all, like me, I've never had a poor evaluation, I've never been arrested, you are terrified of a system. First, you believe in it, thinking that it, they're looking for truth and justice. And then you really quickly realize that it's not truth and justice that they're looking for at all. It is someone to blame for some reason you don't know. I now know that it was political and it was financial gain, I think, that the state of Georgia wanted to redistribute the money going from Atlanta Public Schools to the control of the governor, the then governor, Governor Deal. But yeah, it was horrifying to be charged with RICO, because RICO is for murderers and killers. And the reason I think they use RICO is because there was no concrete evidence against us. There were no emails, no videos, no, there was not even a person who testified that I told them to cheat or I cheated. And so all you have to do really with RICO is connect people together. So loosely they defined in court that we didn't have to be a part of the crime, we didn't have to know about the crime, but we had to be a member of the criminal enterprise. And they defined Atlanta Public Schools as a criminal enterprise.
Wow.
Because bonus money was given to people for academic gains. But I wanna say this about our bonus money. There were 12 people who were indicted. Out of the 12 people, the total amount was $3,500 in bonus money for 4 years. Not $3,500 each year, not $3,500 a person, collectively for everyone, $3,500 for 4 years. And that became a RICO charge.
Wow.
Dr. Evans, I just want to be clear just for our viewers, but are you saying no cheating happened?
No. I'm not saying no cheating happened. I'm saying the for me and the people who, well, I'll just speak for myself.
Okay.
There were no witnesses that said I cheated, nor told any of my teachers to cheat. That I was charged with basically knew or should have known cheating happened at my school because I was a principal. No, there were people who testified in court that they cheated on the test. And there were, so there were 3,500 people in Atlanta Public School District. There were 178 that during the investigation that they found had something to do with cheating, which I think the numbers are off, obviously, because I'm included in that number. And that's 5% of... And I want to say, too, cheating is wrong. And I mean, it skews numbers so much that you can't even tell if you're successful or not. There's no reason to cheat, because the children were capable of passing the test. I always believed in the kids, and I believed in our collective ability as a staff to galvanize the children to be able to help them to achieve at high levels. And so there was no room for cheaters. But people get, when you're not anchored to something, you can do all kinds of things. So I'm not saying that no one cheated, they did. And I am adamantly saying that it's wrong.
And Dr. Evans, thank you so much for clarifying that. Now, this was a national scandal that drew like a lot of attention all across the country to Atlanta Public Schools, a school system that a lot of people, unfortunately, even in Georgia, ignore. And I want to know, back to the film itself, what do you think people are going to take away from this? What are people going to learn? Because I think fairly a lot of people think they know a lot about what happened.
I think the takeaway is that there's a disproportionality in the way that certain groups of people are treated and criminalized in our society. there's a whole rebranding. I, you know, not talking about myself, but I have a PhD. I have pretty much A's. I've never had any ethical violations. I've been promoted. But there was a whole rebranding of me in this whole process that diminished everything that we were as a people. And so as a person and as a people, I think that I want people to take away that what you see in the media, what mainstream media shows you, there is often little truth to it. And it not just isn't just words that we cavalierly say, but it destroys people's lives and it destroys what really could be good in society. So I think one thing is to be careful about to wake up. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who are already watching your show who are already woke, but to wake up and be a part of the process to change things that are wrong, not for just other people that you see, but this can impact you too. Because I never thought in a million years that I could be charged with a crime and convicted of something I didn't do in a society that is supposed to be justice for all, which is really a joke. The third thing is that we are still fighting for justice and in any way that people can help. We would appreciate it. We're going to the appellate court probably in a year or so, and I'll, you know, maybe hopefully come back when it's time for us to go to court and people can come maybe even to the courthouse or I'm not sure how people can help. But in some way where you are, I firmly believe do something where you are. And if it doesn't even impact me in this case, but it impacts something that has to do with the justice system or something that has to do with schools or something that has to do with creating a better world for everybody, not just select groups, do it now.
Well, Dr. Evans, you've suffered a horrible injustice. Feel free to reach out to us if there's anything we can do as your, you know, legal struggle continues. But we appreciate you joining us and putting a human face to this scandal and the tragedy behind it, the injustice behind it. Everyone watching this, I hope that you watch the documentary. But again, Dr. Evans, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I want to take a short break here. More to get to. There's this argument that keeps cropping up recently by Pete Buttigieg that free college for all is a horrible idea because do you really wanna be paying so Barron Trump can go to the University of Central Tennessee? It's stupid and I keep fighting it, but I'm not that persuasive, I guess. But I found someone who's a little bit more persuasive. So I'm gonna have that for you in just a sec. But here, again, he's now not only said that this is why we shouldn't do this plan, but Pete Buttigieg has put out an ad running based on this narrative. Take a look.
I believe we should move to make college affordable for everybody. There's some voices saying, well, that doesn't count unless you go even further, unless it's free even for the kids of millionaires. But I only want to make promises that we can keep. Look, what I'm proposing is plenty bold. I mean, these are big ideas. We can gather the majority to drive those big ideas through without turning off half the country before we even get into office. And that, I think, is the best governing strategy, as well as what it's going to take in order to win. And Lord knows we got to win.
I'm Pete Buttigieg, and I approve this message.
Can I just say that I feel like he is gaslighting me every time he speaks? It's like the candidate who is swimming in his privilege. Mm-hmm. Okay, the reason we are talking about him is based on like this lifting up to the throne that he's been given by society and how we have been consuming as a people this presidential election so far. The candidate that is benefiting more than anybody from his privilege is like, privilege. And it's bizarre. And also, like, someone pointed out on Twitter, like, put this in like just like better terms for you. So what if somebody was like, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, we got to put an income limit on that. You don't want rich kids getting free third grade.
Yeah.
Like, and how that sounds ridiculous because we're just used to the idea that, you know what? Everybody should have like basic education. Mm-hmm. That's it. We shouldn't, because also like people fall through the cracks. It's like this really cute idea that rich people, the cutoff point will be super easy. Unless you say, if your parents pull in 10 million a year, single, then you're cut off. Like, you know what I mean? And there are gonna be people who fall through the cracks. That is why poor people's kids get their lunches thrown away. Mm-hmm. Not because people fall through the cracks. There are free lunch programs everywhere. people fall through the cracks. People will fall through the cracks if you do what he's saying to do.
Yeah.
And it's absurd just based on, just like if we either agree that college should be basic for everyone in this country because of just what type of country we wanna be, or we don't. Yeah. And we start nitpicking things.
Yeah, I think it's absurd to believe it. It's insane to campaign based on it.
This is,
and it's offensive to use it as a way to attack the people that want a simpler, more durable system that everybody gets access to college. To say that, no, you're being divisive. You're gonna lose the election because you think everyone should be able to go to college. That is truly bizarre.
It's like people who argue against McDonald's workers making a living wage because then they'll make the same amount as people whose jobs they respect more.
Yeah.
Like
it's pitting us against each other.
It is, and it's like speaking to a certain group of people who operate like that. And I will tell you, there are so many other things that I would like him to be worried about, like the city that he is currently a mayor of, okay?
Yeah.
There are a lot of people there, like the ones who were yelling at him that like, you were not getting my vote. I would like him to focus on some things that affect those people other than this.
Yeah.
Share basic college education with rich people.
Who aren't going to use it anyway. Because they're gonna go to a far more expensive school with their family connections.
They're gonna go where they wanna go, right?
Yeah, you know what really annoyed me when I was going to the University of Connecticut? I was like bumping into the kids of all these millionaires and billionaires. Like, get out of my way, I'm trying to get to PE.
I deserve to be here, I'm poor.
Yeah,
and overall,
there are some public goods. It's like, I get sick to my stomach when I think about Tom Steyer's kids going to a national park and not having to pay admission.
Yeah.
No, that's not the world I wanna live in. But again, just because as I alluded to in the beginning, I'm apparently not gonna be able to convince people, but AOC is a very good political communicator. So she recently went on a tear about this, tweeting, this is a GOP talking point used to dismantle public systems, and it's sad to see a Dem candidate adopt it. Let's talk about why Republicans are wrong on this, but also Buttigieg, because she was responding to that ad, by the way. Just like rich kids can attend public school, they should be able to attend tuition-free public college. Here's why. Universal public systems are designed to benefit everybody. Everyone contributes and everyone enjoys. We don't ban the rich from public schools, firefighters, or libraries because they're public goods. Universal systems that benefit everyone are stronger because everyone's invested. When you start carving people out and adding asterisks to who can benefit from goods that should be available to all, cracks in the system develop, which you were talking about. Many children of the elite want to go to private IVF schools anyway, which aren't covered by tuition-free public college. But finally, lastly, and I can't believe we have to remind people of this, but it's good to have classrooms from pre-K through college to be socioeconomically integrated. Having students from different incomes and backgrounds in the same classroom is good for society and economic mobility. And she is 100% right. And also winning rhetorically on this. I don't think a lot of reasonable people are taking a look at that Buttigieg ad and saying, you know what? He's actually the one who's standing against the rich people because he's taken this one stand and no others against their interests. He can try to win Iowa based on that. I think that that is a losing argument. The idea that it makes him more electable, I think, is ridiculous. And AOC did a good job of summing up some of what we keep talking about on this show.
Right, and I hate when like they keep repurposing programs that we already have that aren't working. There is already an income-based college help system in place. Like, what is he talking
grants
about?
Grants and stuff, yeah.
What is he talking about?
No, and
set this work.
Set this up so that the rich don't benefit, and watch as Republicans for the rest of your lives try to pick it apart to lower the amount that's funded, all of that. There's a reason that Social Security goes to everybody, even the rich, so that they won't destroy it because they are putting into it and they're also taking out of it. It's a weird political reality, but it is our political reality.
And this is just stupid. Like, I would like him to just repurpose this whole campaign and put Kim Kardashian in because she is doing work that I care about right now, okay?
Yes.
She's getting people who don't deserve to be in prison any longer out of prison. Mm-hmm. He is talking about whether rich people can go to community college for free. This is the dumbest thing. I just don't care.
Yeah.
And none of us
should. So she's trying to get people out of college and he's worrying that one of her kids might go to like the University of Milwaukee West.
Right, and it's like, well, they would pay more. Worry about that. Doesn't that make more sense?
Yeah.
Like, have them pay more into the system. So I just.
Well, I doubt you'd get him to agree to that. We'll see. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I'll be wrong, but probably not. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, Candace's gonna join us on the other side. Joining us now is a congressional candidate for Georgia's 7th District, Nabila Islam. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you here. So there's a lot about your platform and the nature of the race that I want to get into. But one of the things that sort of caught my attention about your race is that, like a lot of people who aren't professional politicians who've run many times, it is a difficult thing to run for office. And so you've had to go to some fairly extreme measures to be able to launch this run. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. Look, first of all, people like me don't usually run for Congress. It's very cost prohibitive. You know, when I first started this endeavor back in February, I thought to myself, look, I was going to get a part-time job. However, I realized that in order to give my attention, my district the full attention it deserves, I needed to do this full time. And so I've had to take some, make some fiscal adjustments to my budget. I've actually put my loans in forbearance, my student loans. And so, and then I've also decided to cancel my health insurance to save money. My health insurance in the first place wasn't really doing much. It's pretty much junk health insurance. And if I were to go canvassing or and get hit by a car or hit by a branch, it wouldn't have covered my ambulance or hospitalization.
Oh, wow.
So I've had to make a lot of fiscal adjustments to run in the first place.
Wow. And so in one way, actually, you canceling your health insurance has actually made you similar to many of the people in the district. About a quarter don't have health insurance right now, even with the ACA and all of that. So talk to me about what you would do were you to get into Congress on healthcare and health insurance.
So 135,000 people in my district don't have health insurance. It's about a quarter of this district. And when I'm in Congress, you know, I'm going to advocate for Medicare for All, a single payer healthcare system where no one gets left behind. You know, it's a broken system when you have about 30 to 40,000 people a year who die because they can't afford health insurance. That shouldn't prevent people from seeking the care that they need. So I'm advocating for an overall, making sure that everyone is able to go see a doctor and that cost doesn't prevent them from doing so.
So you mentioned on your campaign website that Gwinnett County, is that how you pronounce it?
Gwinnett County.
Their rates of deportation, it's the highest in Georgia, rising 250% just in a 1 year period. I think many people, when they think about even the current deportation crisis, they're probably not thinking too much about Georgia, but this is clearly a big issue in your area. What are your thoughts about that?
So Gwinnett County, so my district is a majority minority district, and it includes Southeast Forsyth and Gwinnett County. And Gwinnett itself is the most diverse county in the Southeast. It's the fourth most diverse county in America, and 2% of counties in our country instate a program called 287G, which basically deputizes sheriffs to give them the ability to issue detainers so that ICE can come in and deport them. Most recently, there was a woman named Tanya that was driving through my district, not even from here. She's been living in this country for over two decades without incident. And a sheriff picked her up and put her in a detention center because she was undocumented. She's in remission from cancer, wouldn't let her see a doctor. But they recently released her, but it's unclear whether or not she will be deported. So it's been a huge issue in Gwinnett. It's been separating families. It's been really destructive to our community. And when I'm in office, I'm going to work really hard to make sure that we ban 287G at the federal level.
You know, and one other, it's not unique to Georgia, but one other topic that I have to ask you about that was a big deal in 2018 was actually being able to exercise your democratic rights and vote and know that your vote is counted, know that you're not going to wait in a 5 hour line, know that you're not going to have to present all forms of crazy ID. Georgia's been a real hotbed for voter suppression for a very long time, up until and including today. So what are your thoughts about that? Do you have concerns about your path to being elected in a place where it's very difficult to vote, and what might you be able to do to improve the situation?
Sure. So look, Republicans have been practicing voter suppression here in the state of Georgia for a while. Stacey Abrams, her election was stolen from her. Our Secretary of State currently is going to purge 330,000 people off the voter rolls under the guise of voter maintenance. And that includes 25,000 people in my own district. Look, Republicans only won this seat last year by less than 500 votes. And so we can't afford to lose a single Democratic voter. We've actually launched our own informational campaign to reach out to everyone that's on the purge list in our community to make sure that first they know that they're on the purge list and that they also, you know, make sure that they do fill out all the applications to make sure that they are still eligible to vote. But we need to make automatic registration a federal law. We need to make sure that Election Day is a holiday. We need to make sure that we're reinstating the rights of felons who serve their time immediately reinstate their voting rights.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. But let's talk more about this race. So you mentioned there that last time it was like a 500 vote difference there. So clearly this is a very tight race. NBC has said it's one of the most hotly contested races on the 2020 electoral map. There's you and five other Democrats on the Democratic side, nine Republicans on the Republican side. So NBC seems to have it right. This is going to be a really hotly contested race. Before you can get to one of those nine Republicans, though, there are the other Democrats. So what do you think are the main points of differentiation between you and the other Democrats vying for the seat?
Sure. Look, I'm actually the only candidate that grew up here. You know, I have a shared lived experience with my own community. And I'm also the only one that's running on a progressive platform. I'm the only one that's advocating for Medicare for all, the only one that's advocating for a $15 minimum wage. Look, I'm also the only one that's advocating to legalize marijuana at the federal level. And the only one that's really talking about issues that's affecting our community right now. I feel like a lot of my competitors are running by the same playbook that we've run in the state of Georgia over and over again, is that they're running on these Republican-like campaigns. For some reason, we tend to think that we need Republican votes in order to win, but that's not true. As I mentioned, I live in one of the most diverse districts in America. What we need to do here is expand the electorate, inspire people to vote, and show them that we're fighting for them.
I have a question, because I know a lot personally about this area of Georgia. My mother for about 6-7 years lived in Southwest Atlanta. I know a lot about the people there. I know outside of Atlanta, a lot of the healthcare issues that black women specifically face. How is it possible in a lot of those smaller communities, just like knowing what the state of Georgia is outside of Atlanta specifically, and sometimes within, how is it possible that other candidates aren't all focusing on Medicare for all? Why do you think that is?
So it's strange. I think it's sort of just, I call it Stockholm syndrome of, you know, growing up in a red state, that you feel like you need to pander to Republicans and run on Republican-like platforms. Look, and AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, came out with a poll saying that 63% of Democrats in the state of Georgia support Medicare for all. It's unclear to me why they're not listening, that they're not advocating for Medicare for all when it's the best solution in order to make sure that everyone receives healthcare.
So Nabila, where can people find out more about your platform?
Sure, they can go online on my website. It's www.nabilahforcongress.com. And they can also, I also have a Twitter and Instagram at Nabila4GA07.
Nabila Islam, candidate in Georgia 7th District. Thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We're going to take one last break. We come back, the return of a disgraced YouTuber. We're going to give our thoughts after this.
It's so hard because I'm not trying to like make this about me or like how I've been, because it's not the point of this.
So that is Olivia Jade Giannulli, who has now returned to YouTube after a gap of getting on towards a year following the college admission scandal that she and her mother are having some legal difficulties with. Her mother, Lori Loughlin, and she are accused of paying $500,000 to have their two daughters labeled as recruits to the USC school. The USC crew team, so they could gain admission to the school even though neither participated in the sport. You wanted to add something?
So the mother and father.
Mother and father, sorry. Not her individually. Yeah. She was involved, obviously the beneficiary, but not the person who had organized it. Now, as a result of that scandal, the fact that she was already a public figure in a very 2019 sort of way or 2018 sort of way, she went silent on social media. She lost advertising deals, including cosmetics retailer Sephora and hair products company Tresemme. Hey, what do you know? I got that. I felt more confident with that than the Italian last name.
I know.
But anyway, she has now returned. We gave you a little sample of her video where she said nothing for 2 minutes, honestly. But I want to give you an idea of her strategy going forward, and then we're going to give her commentary. Here's a bit of the video.
Obviously, I've been gone for a really long time. And as much as I wish I could talk about all of this, it's really hard for me to say this just because I know that it's something that needs to be addressed. It's just unfortunately, which is also why I didn't know exactly when I should come back to YouTube. But the reason for that is just because I'm legally not allowed to speak on anything going on right now. A part of me is like, should I come back to YouTube right now? Because it's been so long and I actually really, really miss it. Like, I genuinely miss filming. I feel like a huge part of me is just not the same because this is something that I'm really passionate about and something I really like to do. But I also didn't know. I debated for like 7 or 8 months, like, well, if I can't talk about it, is there a point in coming back and not being able to say anything? I want to come back because I want to come back.
So she says in the video, she doesn't want to just do a video where she can't say anything for 10 minutes. So instead she did a video where she can't say anything for 2 minutes. And she doesn't say anything there. Although as you point out, assuming that video is monetized, she probably made thousands of dollars.
Which is a lot of money.
It's a good job if you can get it.
Care. I think it is so easy to want to shake up rich privileged people. But like, this is mortifying. Nothing involving this is gonna stop them from flourishing in life.
Yeah,
they
the
can't go to a state university
anymore.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was
bizarre.
People
in charge would have stopped them anyway.
That they paid so much,
yes,
allegedly.
That's true.
To get them into USC,
yes.
Okay?
That's true.
Like, but the way the feds are coming at this, or at least, is that none of the kids really knew.
Yeah.
And
That's totally plausible. I don't know why they would have known.
Right, and so if, the point of YouTube, outside of like all the racists that get to like slide under the table and the homophobes, like the point of YouTube is that like poor people who don't come from like rich, famous backgrounds get to create content and show you how great they are and how funny they are and how intelligent you are. And it's okay if rich, privileged people get to benefit from that too. And so she's a young girl.
Is this going to Pete Buttigieg? It sounds like this is to him.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, she's a young girl who wants to be back doing what makes her happy.
Okay.
And if she couldn't get into USC on her own, she probably didn't care about high school that much.
Probably.
Like,
well, she didn't need to because she grew up incredibly rich.
So,
for some people, the reason
she wouldn't be there anyway. Like, I just
was fairly clear on social media that she didn't care about the spot that she had, which offended a lot of people, especially if you didn't earn it. Yes, well, I want to reassure you, I don't care about Olivia Jade at all. I literally didn't know who she was until the scandal, even though she's a million times more famous than I am or ever will be. This isn't really about Olivia Jade. What's interesting though is, so she's disgraced YouTuber. That doesn't mean anything. And it doesn't mean anything having anything to do with Olivia Jade. I don't care about her. She can do whatever she wants. She wants to be a famous YouTuber. So does everybody. So what's the difference? She's going to do that. And she has a great leg up because she's got a famous name and she's rich as hell. So she's going to be fine. This is about us. She's going to do just fine no matter what. This is the sort of thing where there is nothing you can do that hurts you if it gets you, like the old, there's no bad publicity or whatever. That is more true literally every day. The Logan brothers, every stupid stunt, every offensive exploitation of a corpse they found has only made them stronger. Your hatred, my hatred, has only made them stronger. Committing crimes will only make you stronger. Saying horrendous, racist, homophobic things will only make you stronger. And that has nothing to do with Olivia Jade. It has to do with us and who we give our attention and our time and our dollars to. And the fundamental problem about American society especially, but probably all societies too, is that we worship the wrong people. You pointed out YouTube has the opportunity to lift up people who don't have any resources, that are talented and artistic and all that. And it does.
It does. No. I'm not going to compare her to PewDiePie.
Okay,
and
that's
Logan
fine.
Paul.
You're 100% right. She's not nearly as bad as them. But we lift up those people far more than we lift up Olivia Jade. PewDiePie's got the most subscribers in the universe.
There must be two we's, okay? Because you know, I don't mess with
the
races.
I mean
the
royal we, I'm saying.
I'm just kidding.
I'm just saying we need to think about who we are giving our attention to, who we are giving product deals to, who we're giving all of this stuff to, and understand that, like when we see, like let's say you hate Olivia Jade and you're like, man, she really messed up. She's going down. No, she's not. No, she's not. There's only one way and it's up.
Yeah, I don't want to compare her to like the really bad people. She is a pretty young woman and she's white. That is kind of how America operates. So
you're saying they have an advantage?
Even if she were poor, she would very likely do well on YouTube. It is nobody,
you're probably
like,
right.
You did, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, nobody's like, oh my goodness. Aunt Becky's daughter? Yes, because she's gorgeous.
I don't know. Anyway, I don't know anything about her channel. She's, yeah, anyway. Anyway, just something to think about. Thank you as always.
Yes.
Great to have you here.
Thank you, everybody. This is fun as always, John.
Yes, prep for Hostmates, become a member. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.